Call from mom. Answer it. Call silenced.
Instacart knows nothing gets between you and the game. That's why they make ordering from your couch easy. Stock up today and get all your groceries for the week delivered in as fast as 30 minutes without missing a minute of the game.
You have 47 new voicemails.
Download the app to get free delivery on your first three orders while supplies last. Minimum $10 per order. Additional terms apply.
What's good, Houston? Clint Sterner here, joined by my man Wade Smith. We're at Little Woodrow's on Brazos Street in Midtown. Not a bad seat in the house. The doors are up. The TVs are bright. Drinks are cold. Come on through and say hello. We have a special guest that we have every week on this show anyway. He's in several times with the other guys. They're lucky as well. But we've got NFL Hall of Famer, Texans insider, my man, John Mad Dog McClain. He is brought to us by Horn Solutions, by the way. John, you okay with me calling you Mad Dog, or you want to stick with the General?
I never ask anybody to call me the General or Mad Dog. I've never done that. That's just what I got
well,
stuck
Well, you're getting
with.
Mad Dog from me then, brother.
It doesn't matter to me what I'm called. I've been called a lot of worse than that. You mentioned we're sponsored by HornSolutions.net.
Yes,
that'd be my buddy Gary Horn, who I'm sure, like all alums from those unbeaten, nationally ranked, fighting Baylor Bears, who are hosting Texas Tech in homecoming tomorrow. I know Gary Horn will be there. I will not. I've got Kansas City. But it's an exciting time, unlike Arkansas, an exciting time to be a fan of the Baylor Bears.
What is their schedule look like? They should win this weekend. I know you don't want to. I know you can't
then
say that.
They get West Virginia in a primetime game on Halloween, and they got Oklahoma and Texas back to back.
So you're looking at 8-0 going into Oklahoma.
I hope so.
Them Baylor Bears are looking at a possible 8-0 going into Texas and OU or
They're
OU
both
Texas.
In Waco too, but I certainly don't expect victories.
What? They're both in Waco.
They're both in Waco. But listen, I know we're talking a lot about the Baylor football team, but don't leave out the Baylor volleyball team was the
number one team in the nation. So how do you know that?
Because my daughter's getting recruited.
Is that
I'm
right?
I'm just saying. I keep up with
program.
What's going on with these big programs. So I know what's going on in the college volleyball world as well.
Just don't let her go to Arkansas.
Okay.
Would you want her wearing a pig hat?
Woo pig suit?
Yeah, that's right. You got it right. You got it right, baby. Hey, John, talk to me a little bit about them Astros last night, man. I mean, obviously Garrett Cole had an absolute huge game, two games in the series, but they get pushed to game five. There's some struggles along the way, but at the end of the day, they put the Rays to bed, and they're moving on to round two versus the Yankees. Talk to us a little bit about what you saw from the Astros the last few days.
After the way the Nationals came back and beat the Dodgers and the way the Cardinals came back from almost losing in four and put a 10 spot in the first inning, I've never seen this. They're in Atlanta. They score 10 in the top of the first, and then they put their defensive specialists in the bottom of the first. And I thought, well, Tampa could do it. I told everybody, and I said it on the show here this week, I thought they would win with Cole coming back home. Those bats couldn't stay silenced for long. The Rays did a great job. You know, Kevin Cash done a tremendous job. You think about that payroll they have, it's so low. To be able to do what they did, extend the Astros to the limit, people over there ought to be really happy. Now they can go back to drawing 12,000 a game in that Tropicana field, which is the worst in baseball. But I thought it was great. Cole, every time he had a strikeout, I could see the contract he's going to get in free agency. He'll be the first $300 million pitcher. And people think he's going back home to the Angels, but Yankees are going to get to see him firsthand. You know, they tried to trade for Cole. The Astros beat him out. Jeff Luno offered a better package. And, you know, the Yankees don't want to get beat twice. If the Red Sox get involved, maybe the Cubs. Cubs miss the playoffs. And then there's Artie Moreno, the owner of the Angels, who feels like he should do right by Mike Trout because he did that record-breaking contract for Albert Pujols that everybody said he was crazy. And he's earned it. You know, he said before the season, I've earned the right to be a free agent. And as I've never seen an athlete going into unrestricted free agency have this kind of season as he has in any sport.
John, I mean, think. Do you think when I first realized that he was going into unrestricted free agency, when I first started working here and covering things a lot closer than I ever have, I thought, man, I'm at a time where I moved back to Houston for my family. I understand how important that is. So it's something that's important to me. And I'm thinking, man, this guy's going to go back to California. Then I watch him last night saluting the Houston fans. And you hear him talk. I've heard him multiple times over the last 2 weeks talk about how special the coaching staff is and this lineup is. And do you think that the Astros have a legitimate shot at re-signing? We're speculating, but do you think the Astros have a legit shot with everything you've seen of keeping this guy in an Astros uniform moving forward?
Jim Crane said last week or this week he didn't want to go over that luxury tax limit. And they got to re-sign Springer. To me, other than Cole, Springer's the most important guy they got to re-sign. Springer, Brantley, Reddick, they're all going in the last year of their contract. They get Will Harris re-signed. Wade Miley signed a one-year deal. But, man, oh, man, I've never seen anybody fall off the cliff like he has. But I'm sure they'll make another run at Cole. But I believe Scott Boras is his agent.
Yeah.
And he's not going to give a rat's, you know what, about any of that. He just wants the money. But a guy like Cole and his wife, hopefully those things will count for something. You know, you don't give hometown discounts. And one thing that the Coles need to realize is Mike Trout, Bryce Harper, and Manny Machado, the three highest paid players in baseball, they're watching these playoffs on TV.
Yep.
None of them had a record of over 500.
I think they've known that they were going to be at home watching for a long time. So it was they've known for a while, man.
I hope for Trout's sake that if Cole leaves, he does go there. I'd love to see Mike Trout in the playoffs, not at the Astros' expense, but as a wild card. Wouldn't you guys love to see Cole go to the Angels with Trout and then come back here and play in the playoffs next year?
That'd be a monster. What do you think? What about looking forward? I want to stay on these Astros for a little bit with you, man. What about moving forward?
With the Yankees?
We're looking at these Yankees coming. You know, staring in the barrel at the Yankees. You got Greinke in game one. How do you feel about that?
Greinke, he's a hard guy to like based on his news conferences. 68 words today, 67 last time. I don't know. Keeps his head down. It doesn't matter if he pitches well. He's not been a good pitcher in the playoffs. And he's got an ERA in the fours, I think 12 playoff appearances. He'll be back next year. In all likelihood, he'll be the number two guy to Justin Verlander. And you hope he comes back and has a big game against the Yankees. He's been in a lot of big games in regular season. I hear people say Greinke's a Hall of Famer. Well, you can't be a Hall of Famer and not be good in the playoffs. I don't think you don't have to win a World Series, but if you're the stud pitcher on your teams, you got to win some playoff games and pitch well, and this is his chance to do it, to bounce back from that stinker in Tampa, and I'm fired up to see it. In 2017, they weren't favored. I think, were they underdogs to all three? The Red Sox, Yankees, I can't remember, and the Dodgers, and it kind of came out of nowhere.
Yeah.
Now, there's something cool about being the favorite, being the best, and everybody coming after you. We haven't seen that a lot in our city. Despite the success our teams have had, they haven't been the winners other than the Rockets in the mid-90s and the Astros in 2017.
Yeah, when I hear you talk about Zach Greinke, I think about it and I'm like, man, how the mighty have fallen, because when the trade happened here in Houston, everybody was excited and we knew that, all right, now – this, he almost can just guarantee a World Series. You have three aces that are in the hole, and you know that you're going to match up and be better than any starting pitching group that you go up against in the playoffs. But when you look at it now, I look at game one and I say, man, if Greinke can pull out a victory against the Yankees, it's almost a steal. Do you agree with that it would be like stealing game one if
yes,
the Astros can win it?
I do, Wade, because right now I don't expect a lot from him based on his playoff history in that first game. If he loses, Verlander has to win. You can't go to New York down 0-2. And if Greinke wins, that tells me they're going to be 2-0 going to New York. And at worst, it'll be back here. So it's always fun to play the Yankees. Any New York team, but especially the Yankees. I was listening to Christopher Mad Dog Rousseau, about as big a homer for New York as you can get. And he picked the Yankees. That's fine. But he picked them in five. And I'm thinking, how can you in your right mind pick the Yankees in five? Six, maybe seven, of course. but not five. But that's that New York bias. And I'd rather beat the Yankees than any team there is. My wife's a big Nationals fan from D.C., and she's really pumped and started thinking about their pitching with Strasburg and Scherzer. I think that'd be a great World Series. Watch our two versus their two. Sorry to the Cardinals.
Hey, we've talked a lot about, obviously, we probably fell victim. We did it to ourselves, but talking about just the pitching staff and Osuna struggling and Presley coming off the injured list and struggling and you know, guys going out and that being the major concern in the playoffs, and then all of a sudden in game three and four, the bats just go stone cold on the Astros. So last night, Wade's point was not only do they have to come alive, but they have to come alive early. They have to come alive quick, and they did that, put four up in the first inning. But I think as you look back on that game, the one guy right now that's in a serious funk is Carlos Correa. We both talked about him earlier. Is I don't care what he does with the bat. If he keeps stealing hits deep in the hole, two or three hits a game, then I'm good with him at shortstop. Where do you sit with him slumping and his ability to play some serious defense?
I remember Springer slumping in 2017, and he got the Golden Sombrero, I believe, and then he got to be the MVP. Correa's missed all that time. It's not surprising that he might need some time, but, man, he's so good in the field. Hey, shortstops are not supposed to hit. It wouldn't surprise me at all if he doesn't break out, because the Yankees pitching staff is not their strength. Their bullpen's better. The Astros have better starting pitching. Both have great hitters. I can't wait.
Calling all Texas Longhorn fans. Little Woodrow's in Midtown is your game day headquarters, and you will not want to miss out on their Red River Rivalry Party. Say that three times for me right there, John McClain.
Catch. Does that hurt you to say Red River Rivalry?
No, it don't hurt me. I beat Texas my last outing, baby. I'm all good. Catch all the action. Catch all the action at their indoor-outdoor bar with bucket specials, sound on, and a post-game DJ as the Texas Longhorns take on the Oklahoma Sooners. Follow us on Facebook and Instagram to stay updated on upcoming events. Little Woodrow's, your local Texas watering hole. More John McClain next, right here on Sports Radio 610. What's good, everybody? We are at Little Woodrow's Midtown location off Brazos Street. We do have a programming announcement. Rick Kamla is no longer with Sports Radio 610. We wish him the absolute best. Today, I'm joined by former NFLer, former Houston Texans offensive lineman Wade Smith, and Hall of Famer Baylor Bear.
Second.
There it is. John McClain. John, how you doing, my man?
I couldn't be better. I was thinking last week, when I was watching the Texans, they've had their offensive line intact, their regular line now, two games. And they beat the Chargers and they beat the Falcons. And in those two games, Watson's been sacked twice, both against the Chargers. And he has eight touchdowns and no interceptions. And so you know Laremy Tunsil's played so well the last three games. And, Wade, let me ask you something. And since you were part of the best offensive line the Texans have ever had, if you were to come like Laremy, you come in, the trade's August 31st, you come in September 1st, you don't have the benefit of the offseason, preseason, training camp, what's it like to try to learn on the fly? How much harder is it?
He definitely was put in a very difficult situation. When you look at it, when you don't have the background of that offense and being there for the entire offseason, it's difficult to get caught up with what's going on and what everybody else has going on. Fortunately, the thing for Laremy Tunsil is he's such an exceptional player that he can overcome some of those shortcomings of not exactly knowing what he's supposed to do on each and every play and the different adjustments and the different communications that go on up front. And so that's why you're going to see Laremy Tunsil to continue to get better as the season goes on, and you're going to continue to see the offensive line get better as a whole, because as you've seen, and we talked about it earlier today, Clint, the Houston Texans have invested a ton in the offensive line when it comes to Laremy Tunsil and the two draft picks that they gave up for him, the first-round draft pick for Titus Howard and the second-round pick for Max Sharping. All of those guys – are starting to pay dividends, and you're seeing that the offensive line is playing better, because if you bring in better players, you're naturally going to be better up front. And so I'm glad to see it. But, yeah, it's definitely a difficult situation to be in when you come in such a last minute and having to go full speed ahead and start off your season on Monday Night Football
how
against the New Orleans Saints.
Is it to have Sharping next to Tunsil and Howard next to Fulton instead of saying leave Sharping at right guard where he's next to another rookie?
Yeah, I'm definitely appreciative that Bill O'Brien and Mike Devlin made that decision to put a veteran next to the rookies as opposed to putting Sharping and Titus Howard on the same side, because if I'm an opposing defense, I'm a defensive line coach, I'm a defensive lineman, I'm a defensive coordinator, and I see two rookies side by side, I'm licking my chops. And I don't care what rookies you put out there. When you put two guys that haven't done it at this level for a consistent basis and seen everything that can be thrown at them, it's going to get exploited and taken advantage of. And so by them putting them next to two offensive linemen that have been there and done that, a guy like Laremy Tunsil that is going to be a Pro Bowler this year and multiple years going on in the future, that's going to help Max Sharpton extremely pick up the offense, and not even just pick up the offense as far as his brain and his smarts, because everybody has talked about how smart Max Sharpton is as a player, but the nuances of the game and the communication and being able to work together and in conjunction, those things are absolutely necessary. So I thought those definitely big, really good decisions that were made by the Texans front office and coaching staff.
Wade, we talked about it earlier, and so often when we talk about Laremy Tunsil and all these offensive, we're always talking about pass protection. We're always talking about sacks. I mean, you know what I mean? We talked about Laremy Tunsil earlier, and we didn't have time, but I want you to talk a little bit about really the immediate impact is, especially if you're talking about helping the guy next to him, is in the run game. Like
yes.
Moving defensive tackles in double teams, allowing those young guys to either dominate a three technique or get off to the second level quicker if they need to. Talk a little bit about what Laremy Tunsil brings to the table from that perspective.
Yeah, when you talk about connecting how the plays are called by the offensive coordinator and how those plays are executed up front, I think the Texans, and I've seen it on film, they're trying to figure out ways to get Laremy Tunsil and Max Sharpton together on double team blocks to move three techniques off the ball and get up to the second level, because both of those guys do that very well. Max Sharpton, when I went back, I was thinking back about it when we watched them in training camp, and they did a drill. This is back when what's my guy's name? Khalil was still here at left tackle. Back in during training camps, the best offensive lineman that they had running double teams blocks was Max Sharpton, and I was surprised. Like, okay, you got this rookie coming in here that's doing such a good job in practice on it, because it was a specific drill set up for
right,
that.
Right.
And so when I saw that, and you couple a guy like him and then a guy like Laremy Tunsil, where when you watch that film of him in Miami,
he jumps.
When he comes off that ball, he's creating movement. He's getting up to the second level. He's finishing guys. And so when you got two guys that do well in double team blocks, now you're creating softness in the defensive line. And that's why you're seeing those long runs that Carlos Hyde and Duke Johnson are breaking off on the left side of the line of scrimmage.
Did you guys see the two plays where Tunsil on run blocks, he knocked this guy down and he pounced on him like WWE.
Oh, yeah.
That's that nasty. I call them nasty guys.
All
I like offensive
eat.
Linemen with a defensive mentality. I mean, he just pounced on him and laid on him.
Yeah, it's all you can eat, man. We look for pancakes. And so when you get a defensive lineman on the ground, you want to put them on the ground and keep them on the ground and let them know that it's going to be a long day. And anytime you can make a defensive lineman pick himself off out of the ground, now that's going to affect him as the game goes on. And now in the second and the third and the fourth quarter, his pass rush isn't quite the same. And you know what? I'm tired of taking on these double team blocks. Maybe I need to just tap out like Dwight Freeney did back in the day when we played him with the Houston Texans when Arian Foster went for 231 yards. You can break a man's will. That's probably the one thing about the NFL that I miss is being able to line up and have your brothers next to you and go break another man's will and bend him to what you want him to do. Make another grown man do what he does not want to do. And Laremy Tunsil has that dog in him, and you're seeing that translate across the front with the Houston
Sharpton
Texans.
Sharpton does, too.
Yeah. Wait, that's it's funny, man. Like I, the only time in my career where I played with an, I mean, like Larry, I played some great individuals in the league and some monsters in Larry Allen, and he could do it individually. But when I was in college, man, the guys that were a year ahead of me, my entire offensive line, except for one guy, Bobby Williams, who you know played in the league forever.
Yeah,
he was my left tackle, but the other guys were just. I mean, they were just powerful offensive linemen and a great unit. We ran the ball really well. And I remember we'd start a game and boys from Mississippi State and boys from Bama, they'd be over there chirping and just all that trash talking. And you look over at midway through the third or early in the fourth and their hands are on their hips, their mouth ain't moving. You're like, yeah, these boys up front done took your heart now. I tell you what, you listen to Sports Radio 610. I'm Clint Sterner. That's Wade Smith, former NFLer, former Houston Texan, and we are joined by John Mad Dog McClain, NFL Hall of Famer, Baylor Bear alum. Wow, Bears got a big game this week, man. Johnny, talk to me a little bit about Kenny Stills. We hadn't talked about that today. Good Lord. All that damn prep I do and we ain't talked about Kenny Stills today. I know Bill O'Brien said he's a game-time decision, but you've been in and around the team, and do you think he'll be back on the field this week? And if he is, how much of an impact does he make? And if he isn't, is Kiki QT ready to rock and roll like he was last week?
I will be surprised if he plays. We talked last week. When you're running, and you guys know you played, if you pop a hamstring that causes you to go out of bounds immediately limping, you don't come back in 1 or 2 weeks, at least I don't think. And without Stills, they scored 53 points and had 592 yards, including 426 passing. And QT contributed 51-yard reception. One of the things that's good about this offense, 14 plays of 30 or more yards, second to Kansas City 16, and Will Fuller's tied for second in the league. And then Stills, even though he didn't play, he's tied for third or fourth. And he doesn't have a lot of catches, but, man, they're big plays. Two things that are almost going unnoticed. Texans lead the league in third down conversion percentage.
That's big.
And they're second in red zone. Last year, every week we're talking about their problems in the red zone.
Yep.
Treated like quicksand. This year, they have been incredible on third down and in the red zone. And with the Chiefs defense, I look for the Texans to score a lot if they don't turn it over. Watson, of course, only has one interception. And I look for the Chiefs to have a lot of scores, too. I think it's going to be high. I think I picked it 33-30. I can't. It's not many regular season games I get this fired up about that don't have playoff implications or are not the opener, which is naturally exciting. But I'm pumped to go to Arrowhead. And somebody on the mailbag that I do every week posted Friday morning on Texas Sports Nation. A guy said that was no more moon comparisons. Watson had the best performance he'd ever seen. Moon never had a game like that. I said, whoa. 1990, in the freezing rain at Arrowhead Stadium, he threw 527 yards, tied Darn Van Rocklin's all-time record, and three touchdowns, and they beat the hell out of the Chiefs.
Let's get a
527. I had a pause on that one, 527.
Warren Moon was a bad man. Look, John, you talk about great on third down, great in the red zone. I don't know where they sit right now. I haven't looked this week on turnover ratio, but they have not turned the ball over much at all. So they're doing really well in that category. And then you couple all of those stats, which I think that's conducive to winning football games, to what we saw last week on the field versus the Atlanta Falcons. And take away the wow factor aspect of what you saw last week, as hard as that, as difficult as that is to do, that was good. If they'd have scored 25 points, you still look at that game and you go, Deshaun did things that we've been looking for a year. Bill O'Brien, Tim Kelly, they did things that we've been looking to see for a year on the football field, and it all happened. I just think all things considered, with the stats you just mentioned on top, it's a good sign, and the Texans are catching the Chiefs at the right time. And I tell you what we're going to do next. We've got more with NFL Hall of Famer John McClain, and we're going to talk just about that. We're going to talk about this Texans and Chiefs matchup specifically with John McClain next. We're back. We've got John McClain, Hall of Famer, Baylor Bear.
Say come.
It is. And we got my man Wade Smith, former Houston Texan, former NFLer, bounced around the league in several teams. He actually played in Kansas City as one of the bad guys and as one of the good guys. You were once.
Yeah,
it
just
once
depends on how you look at it, depending on what side of the street you were standing
that's
on.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right. As I mentioned, we're joined by John McClain. We are at Little Woodrow's in Midtown on Brazos Street. Y'all stop through hang out with us. I'll let y'all buy me a Coors Light or two or three, whatever. John, Mr. McClain will let you buy him a Coors Light as well. So come on through. We'll be here. John, Wade and I talked a little bit about the tight ends, both in the pass game and the run game. And we talked about, man, that Fails connected at the end of the line of scrimmage, and Akins, his ability to move around and line up in different places, it's a real advantage and a significant part of this offense. I know you wrote about the tight ends specifically today, man. Talk to us a little bit about what you wrote.
Fuller and Hopkins have 5 touchdowns. Fells and Akins have 5 touchdowns. They have more touchdowns than any tight ends in the NFL, which seems so weird. And there's a website, sharpfootballanalysis.com, had a great story this week about 12 personnel, 2 tight ends, 2 wide receivers, 1 back, and how the Texans played it more last season than any team in the league. And they did that with Jordan Thomas and Ryan Griffin primarily. Jordan Akins got to play too. And they liked it. Last week I noticed there were times when Fells and Akins were lined up wide and Fuller and Hopkins were inside. And I thought Bill O'Brien, who calls the plays, Tim Kelly, who helps him go over the game plan along with Mike Devlin, Carl Smith, and others, I thought they did a great job with their personnel and then the execution. And the key, of course, and this came from next-gen stats from the NFL, Watson threw the ball 0.46 seconds quicker than any time he had this year. And getting rid of the ball fast made such a difference. You know, Wade, you know, Clint, you know, if you get rid of the ball fast, the offensive line loves you. And he was so decisive and accurate. And I think that – I don't know how he picks out the weapons. They got too many. If Kenny Stills, when he comes back, you got 4 receivers who are starters. Then you got your 2 tight ends. And they'll try to distribute the ball based on their game plan to try to attack the defense. And I would imagine we're going to see that back foot hits the balls coming out more.
No question about it. I'm sorry. Go ahead, Wade.
No, no question about it. What I was talking about it here is that, you know, I want to switch over to the other side of the ball. You know, I think that the offense and the skill position players they have there have been tremendous all season long when they've getting their opportunities, and Deshaun Watson's getting the ball out quickly to them. But on the defensive side of the ball, there's a guy by the name of Bradley Roby, who I feel like has come into this building and been out there and been all over the place. You had to line him up in the slot once Aaron Coven got released, and he's played well there. He's done well on the outside. I've seen him come on blitzes. He's been all over the place, and that's kind of been that taboo word around here with the Houston Texans as far as versatility, but he's been extremely versatile. And I got to ask you, John, how quickly – or is he gaining the much traction that you would expect out of a person to have him get the Brinks truck backed up to NRG and get that big contract since he's on that 1-year deal?
Yeah, we were thinking last year at this time, are we thinking, oh, somebody's going to pay Tyrann Mathieu $14 million a year? No. And Rudley Roby's off to a really good start. I mean, he's not going to the poorhouse this year at $10 million, but he's playing well. I can't wait to see him and Tyreek Hill if Hill plays. Last year he had 1 really good game. I think he limited Hill to 4 catches and 23 yards.
Yep.
And the other matchup, Deshaun Gibson against Travis Kelce. One reason they signed Gibson, last year Gronkowski and Ertz just decimated the Texans. Against Jacksonville, Gronk and Ertz didn't do squat. And Gibson played a big role in that. Last time the Texans played Kelce, I think he was 7-for-98 or 8-for-98, no touchdowns. But the only time the Texans had done a great job on him was 1 year with A.J. Boye covering him all over the field. People thought, wow. And I think that was the first game of the season. But watching Roby go against Hill and watching Gibson go against Kelce, that's why they signed these guys. Those are going to be 2 great matchups.
Mad Dog, you ducked my man's question, though.
He's talking about the money.
Yeah, he's going to make a lot of money. And the problem with the Texans trying to get paid here,
right?
DJ Reader and Whitney Merciless are having great seasons. They got to be paid. Deshaun Watson is going to end up being the second highest paid player in history behind Patrick Mahomes after this season. I'm sure Watt and Hopkins will want new contracts. They got a lot of guys whose contracts are going to be up. And And there's nothing like seeing a healthy guy play in the last year of his contract to get the best out of him. And Roby is certainly one of those. Think about the value of a corner, former number one pick, got a Super Bowl ring, can play inside and outside, can run, is a good tackler. I don't know what happened to him last year. I don't know if maybe Vance Joseph coming in there, taking over, had something to do with his performance as well as some of those other Broncos' performances. And if Wade Phillips had still been there, maybe Roby would have kept going up. But the Texans certainly benefited from him and having that mediocre season and the Broncos not wanting him back.
I'd be interested to spend some time thinking off the air, obviously, and then bring it to the show sometime. But there's no doubt about it. The quarterback, the left tackle, a coverage dictating wide receiver, and a corner. To me, those are your four. I guess you could probably throw a pass rusher, an elite pass rusher, in there somewhere. But those are your four. That boy, if you can get those four guys locked up under contract and build around them, you're in really, really, really good
shape.
Yeah,
I believe you got to put that pass rusher in there too.
Yeah, I guess the pass rusher thing for me, I guess the pass rusher thing for me, John, is like, it's so, nowadays it can be an outside linebacker, it can be a defensive end, it can be, you know, one of these guys like a J.J. Watt or an Aaron Darnold. So it's like, what do you, you know, just, is it one of any of those, or how do you get to their pass rusher? But, you know, that's, go ahead, Wayne.
Well, I look at it like this. You named all five of those positions, and all five of those guys are up for the Houston Texans. You're talking about Laremy Tunsil. You're talking about Deshaun Watson. You got talking about Hopkins. Hopkins.
Technically,
Will
Hopkins
Fuller.
And White got 2 years left. Fuller's got 1 year left. They could exercise the fifth-year option on Watson. I don't expect them to. But Roby and Reader and Merciless, you sign them or they're gone.
Yeah, they're going to be hot on the market too. There's no doubt. You're listening to Sports Radio 610. I'm Clint Sterner. That's Wade Smith and John McClain. John, let's talk. I know you've been to Kansas City multiple times over your career. Wade and I talked earlier a little bit about how difficult of a place that is for a road team to go and play, much less win. The weather appears to be, it's obviously this time of year, it's not going to be extremely cold, so that shouldn't be a factor. But there's no doubt about it. Whether we're talking about the fans and the momentum and the noise is going to be a problem. And Andy Reid is an absolute monster when you're talking about an offensive play caller, designer, quarterback developer. I mean, those two things right there, two things we discussed earlier. How do you feel about those and the Texans' ability to overcome them this Sunday?
One of the reasons that Arrowhead is such a good experience, sea of red, everybody's dressed, but also the way the stadium was built, Wade, you know, you played there, it goes up instead of out. So everybody's close to the field. Like, they couldn't put another sport in there. But this is something I mentioned to Tunsil yesterday, and Clint, you know this. A lot of the media was asking Tunsil about the crowd and the noise. If you come from the SEC or the Big Ten, you play in front of crowds bigger than that every week. So what's the big deal? You learn how to adjust to crowds, and no place that they play this year is going to be louder than the Superdome was. And they should have won that game.
No question about it. Now, I got to ask you this, John. Since you're going up to Kansas City, you're leaving tomorrow, I'm guessing, at about 7 p.m., in Kansas City tomorrow evening, where are you going to be eating and what are you going to be eating? Because Kansas City has a bunch of good food spots. So where are you going to be, John McClain?
Probably the first 20 years I did that. And now, because Baylor plays, I'm on the last flight. I don't leave here at 9:45 p.m. I will watch Baylor's homecoming. Then I will watch the Astros on the plane. And when I get up there and then whatever innings are left, I'll watch at the airport. So I will not be going anywhere. But a lot of people have asked me, and I sent them to, like, Arthur Bryant's Barbecue, Jack Stack Barbecue. I don't know any places but barbecue. And it's blasphemous to say this up there, of course. And I think it's great, but it's not as good as ours. Of course, nothing's as good as it is in Texas.
Hey, you see how
– as three native Texans would agree, right?
No question about it.
Look, Wade, it's funny, man. I'm sitting here and I'm listening to John talk about, well, when I used to go to Kansas City, I'd do this. I fly to New Orleans every Friday night and do a college football show tomorrow morning.
Yeah.
And about, I don't know, about 5-6 years ago, boy, I'd have been on the first thing smoking after this show was over, and I'd be on Bourbon Street in a heartbeat. Now, I take the last flight out, I ease on to the hotel room, I get up early, go do the show, and I'm on the first thing smoking back down here. Boy, if this show would have came around about 6 years ago, Wade, y'all might lose me in New Orleans. I'd be like, somebody call us. Clint, did Clint make it back, baby?
What's the most trouble you ever got into in New Orleans?
You know, I, John, it's surprising. And as I look back on my time, and not just in New Orleans, but I did a lot of things. I never did bad things. I never did anything that would put me under the jail. But I did. There's a lot of times I spent really toeing the line. And in New Orleans, just being in the wrong place at the wrong time, headed back to the hotel, that's probably the dangerous thing I've ever done. But I spent a lot of time at bachelor parties down there doing foolish stuff. But
that's what they're for.
Yeah, no doubt. New Orleans never got me. Now I do have a buddy of mine recently that got down there and on a weeknight at a work outing, and somebody must slip something in his old drink early, and it messed up his evening. Now, so it's dangerous out there in New Orleans. I never got any of that treatment, but we get too far off in the weeds. It's going to turn into an X-rated show. I got to be careful, John.
We were in the Super Bowl there, and I can't remember what club we were in, and there was a bunch of us, and there was a really, really hot woman flirting with me.
Not in New Orleans.
And I was married, and I'm thinking, man, oh, man. Except I think Carol was there, too. Turned out she was a man.
Oh,
and somebody
man.
Pointed that out to me, and I'm like, my God. He is hot. And I ran in the other direction.
Yeah, you don't ever know. I mean, New Orleans, you don't ever know what you're going to get. But I love the food. I love the people, just their personalities, the laid back. I guess it's a party personality. The fact you can walk down the street and hit the casino, I can't get enough of that. Let's get back to the Texans and the Chiefs here. I know it's hard to go from New Orleans to there, but as you look at this game, John, well, on both sides of the ball, Wade and I are going to hit it in a little bit, but on both sides of the ball, just give us a couple of keys. Obviously, you got to keep an eye on Tyreek Hill if he does play. Do you think Tyreek Hill's going to play?
I do, but I don't have any inside information. I just think he will because they thought he was going to last week. Sammy Watkins, I don't know. You know, they've lost their left tackle, Eric Fisher, their backup, Cam Irving's going to have his hands full with Merciless. He'll have to have help. I think that I would not go in with a game plan of run, run, run like the Colts, because the Colts, you take the ball out of Jacoby Brissett's hands, it's not any big deal. You take the ball out of Deshaun Watson's hands, it's a big deal. Throw to set up the run like they did, and they can run on them. They are 30th against the run. They give up a lot of yards per carry, but the team the Texans played this year that was the worst against the run going into that game, the Chargers, and they held them 39 yards.
Yeah.
So the Chiefs, you know, are going to work on that, but it's going to be about Watson versus Mahomes. Everybody else is, you know, they're supporting characters in this, and whoever can protect them the best. Mahomes should be limited his mobility because of his high ankle sprain. Watson not limited at all. You know, Frank Clark has one sack. That's not why they brought him in there and paid him all that money. He's got to do better. And I'd love to see Tyrann Mathews. I'm guessing they're going to move him all over the place and see if his familiarity with Watson last year will benefit him in any way.
Are we going to see Sunday? I mean, are these guys, when I say Watson and Mahomes, are we looking at the next must-see TV from a quarterback perspective, Brady Breeze kind of thing?
We sure are. And Aaron Wilson's writing a story about that Sunday, two best examples of the modern quarterback. And we talked to Andy Reid about that, Bill O'Brien. Andy was really good talking about it because Andy kind of adapted his offense to the college game. I said a lot of people were scared away from Mahomes because, remember, he was not a consensus number one. But then as people got to know him, he had 18 visits. He got a lot of frequent flyer miles. And Andy said, I didn't care that he was running all over the place and throwing the ball. All I know is he got the ball to his receivers no matter what the situation, and so then he tailored the offense to fit him.
Yeah, you know, John, the question for me moving forward with Pat Mahomes is can he continue to play that out-of-the-pocket style game? Because it's a big part of his game. It's not that we talk about, well, yeah, he's capable of doing it. Well, no, he plays a lot of time. He plays a high percentage of plays outside the pocket, which means he's exposed to hits and exposed to, I guess, a little riskier style of play. The question is one, to me, can that right there win a Super Bowl? And two, can he stay healthy throughout his career doing that. Right
now, he
doesn't
get hit much. Right? He doesn't get sacked
much.
Well,
he got hobbled up last week, I promise you that.
Well, that's because somebody hit him from the side while he's in the pocket.
Lineman. One of his linemen stepped on him. John McClain.
Thank you, guys.
I appreciate you for coming in and hanging with us at Little Woodrow's, my man.
My pleasure as always, and sick 'em Bears.
Good luck to you, Bears. Safe travels to you this weekend to Kansas City.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.